This is VOA News. I'm Steve Miller. At least 290 people were killed and almost 500 injured in a bomb blast that ripped through churches and luxury hotels in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. It's the first major attack on the Indian Ocean islands since the end of a civil war 10 years ago. The Sri Lankan community living in Paris held a vigil in the early hours Monday morning.
We want to pay homage to the victims of Sri Lankans. And we want to tell them we are with them, and we think about them, and we pray for them.
The Sri Lankan government officials have said that 32 foreigners were killed and 30 injured in the explosions that tore through congregations and gatherings in hotels in Colombo, Negombo, and Batticaloa. Ukraine has entered an uncharted political water on Sunday after an exit poll showed that Volodymyr Zelensky easily won enough votes to become the next president of the country that is at war with Russia. Reuters' Colette Luke has more.
He has few detailed policies and will take over the leadership of a country at war with Russia. Poroshenko, who was hoping for a second five-year term, tried to cast himself as a bulwark against Russian aggression. But in the end, he was trounced by the political neophyte and conceded on Sunday. Zelensky has pledged to keep Ukraine on a pro-Western course and has also assured investors, without offering concrete plans, that he would push reforms, tackle corruption, and keep the economy anchored to an International Monetary Fund loan program.
That was Reuters' Colette Luke. Two people, including a British aid worker, have been shot dead and four tourists abducted in an attack by armed gunmen on a holiday resort in northwestern Nigeria, according to police. This is VOA News. The United States is expected to announce on Monday that all buyers of Iranian oil will have to end their imports shortly or face sanctions, according to a source familiar with the situation. Speaking to Reuters news agency, that news triggered a 3% rise in crude oil prices. U.S. President Donald Trump has made clear to his national security team over the last few weeks that he wants to end the waivers to exert maximum economic pressure on Iran by cutting off its oil exports and reducing its main revenue source to zero. Protesters demonstrating against the ruling military council in Sudan said on Sunday they were disappointed by suspended talks between the two sides. Munzir al-Obeid Yassan told the AP that he hoped the military would create a government, a civilian government, that could solve their problems and create a new Sudan in the right direction. They would be able to compete with other Arab countries. Protest organizers said their move to suspend the negotiations came when the ruling council failed to meet demands for an immediate transfer to a civilian government following the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Iranian state media states that Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has begun his first official visit to neighboring Iran for talks to set focus on strengthening bilateral ties, fighting terrorism, and safeguarding borders. The visit comes a day after Pakistan asked Iran to take action against terrorist groups believed to be behind the killing of 14 Pakistani soldiers earlier this month. Pakistan's foreign ministry said in a letter to the Iranian government that the assailants came from an alliance of three Baluch terrorist organizations based in Iran. The debate over the Mueller report continued on Sunday U.S. talk shows. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has those details.
As President Trump was heading to Easter services in Florida, tweeting the Mueller report was, quote, nothing but a total hit job, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway took to the airways.
This has been a frustrated president about an ill-conceived, illegitimate investigation from the beginning.
Not so fast, says Congressman Elijah Cummings, who chairs the House Oversight Committee. He says the Mueller report is a roadmap for further action by Congress.
I think he basically said to us as a Congress, it's up to you to take this further with regard to obstruction and other matters that might come up.
While Cummings was on CBS's Face the Nation, Conway appeared on ABC's This Week. Shelley Adler, Washington.
Armed men on motorcycles have attacked a Malian army camp and killed an unknown number of people near Mali's border with Mauritania. There's no immediate claim of responsibility. From Washington, I'm Steve Miller, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudanese protesters say they have suspended talks with the ruling military council.
The military starts contacting some of the parties who were part of the Bashir system. So for that reason, the protesters feel that the military are not serious to carry on what they promised.
Elami Shingraya is a member of the Policy Bureau of the 27 November Movement. A Ugandan police spokesman will explain why the police canceled Bobby Wine's Easter holiday concert. Malawi will launch a pilot malaria vaccine this Tuesday. And Liberia's justice minister summons a member of parliament critical of President George Weah to appear today, Monday.
I've exercised my right according to the Constitution to do what I'm doing, to speak for the Liberian people. If I have to go to jail for that, I got no problem with that.
Yeka Koluba is a member of the Liberian legislature. And Liberia's information minister says the Weah government believes in the rule of law. And those stories plus Samson Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Let reports out of Sudan on Sunday said the Sudanese Professional Association has suspended talks with the ruling military council for the council's failure to transfer quickly to a civilian government. The group led protests that led to the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Elami Shingraya, a member of the Politburo of the 27 November Movement, says in addition, the military council has been too close to the deposed leader, Bashir.
The military agree with the protest at the first day that they are going to agree with them on all what had been signed before. And what happened now, there is some delay in their part. And number two, the military starts contacting some of the parties who were part of the al-Bashir system. So for that reason, the protesters feel that the military are not serious to carry on what they promised in their first announcement 4 days or 5 days ago.
So what do you think is going to happen next now? What's going to happen?
Now I think we are going to just wait for the military with their reaction. We hope that they will be wise enough to agree with the protesters and to sit down with them and to sort out all the problems so they can return back to the table. If the military council continue on the same program or the same schedule of al-Bashir, then things will not be good.
We keep talking about the military. Did the civilian groups put forward any names that they would like to see in the transitional government?
No, they hold on announcing names. They said now let us finish the first, which is to make sure that the military council will agree upon the first important issue, which is to release the power for the Sudanese professional gathered. These Sudanese professional gathered are the only group of Sudanese civilians who had been agreed upon by most of the Sudanese people as the representatives of them. And we don't want other parties to speak on behalf of the Sudanese except the Sudanese professional gathered.
There was a story on Sunday that the military-led government is planning to send a delegation to Washington to get the United States to drop Sudan from the list of countries that sponsor terrorism. Do you think that that should happen right now?
I heard that in the news that they are going to send a delegation, and I think that will be a good relief by lifting all these sanctions against Sudan.
Even when the military government has not made possible a smooth transition.
We expect actually a press release from the Sudanese professional gathered about this issue. Are they going to help the military council on that issue, or are they going to contact the American government to stop that initiative?
Elami Shingraya is a member of the Political Bureau of the 27 November Movement. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Liberia's Justice Minister has summoned a member of the House of Representatives, Yeka Koluba, to the Justice Justice Ministry today, Monday, to discuss tension in the country involving the representative and President George Weah. Some former rebels who now are members of the Armed Forces of Liberia have threatened to arrest Koluba. But Representative Koluba says he's not afraid of what might happen because he's speaking on behalf of the Liberian people according to the Constitution.
We don't know what will be discussed there, but I received a communication citing me for a conference. So I'm going to respect the Justice Ministry. I respect the rule of law. We'll go there to meet the minister, and we'll start up from there. Anything I get to do with me going to the court for what I have said, if it is in line with the Constitution, I'm going to respect it.
Are you not concerned that you could get arrested for your call for impeachment of the president?
If I will be arrested for going by what the Constitution said, then let me be arrested. Let the Liberian people know that I'm going by the Constitution. I have exercised my right according to the Constitution to do what I'm doing, to speak for the Liberian people. If I have to go to jail for that, I got no problem with that. Let me go to jail tomorrow and let it be history that I went to jail for speaking for my people.
According to the government, you made threatening statements to the government.
Everything I said was in line with the Constitution, so I've not gone wrong in any instance.
When you say everything you said is in line with the Constitution, what did you say?
For me, I said the president will be leaving in 3 months. I was making reference to the impeachment bill that I have, because I think in my mind and by law, the impeachment bill will go on the floor, and in 2 to 3 months, we'll be finished with the impeachment of this president.
Why do you feel the president should be impeached?
Because the Constitution has been violated on so many occasions, and we think the Constitution is the organic law of this country. If the Constitution is violated by this president, we should place a bill on the floor. For breaching the Constitution, he can be impeached by that. And in my mind, I think he has breached the Constitution, so I think he should be impeached.
In what way do you think the president has breached the Constitution?
Take, for example, the impeachment proceeding of Honorable Kabinda Janet. It was strictly against the Constitution of this country. And those are some of the provisions that he has violated. So I have carved a bill that will be placed on the floor for the impeachment proceeding to start.
Some former rebels have made threats on the lives of people who they believe to be critical. What do you make of those comments that these people have made?
Firstly, we are calling on ECOWAS, UN, and the American government to enforce the establishment of the war crime code in this country. Because you will not have rebels, generals, threatening to arrest a seated lawmaker. It is because the war crime code is not here. That is why they're behaving the way they're behaving. So we are calling on the international community to prevail on our president for the war crime code to come. If we are dumb, we have gone wrong anywhere to our people, so we can be here accountable for what we have done. Tomorrow, they will say they want to overthrow the president of this country. They are threatening the peace of the state. So we are calling on the president to please ensure that the war crime code comes so we can face justice.
Yeka Koluba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Liberia's Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says democracy in Liberia is not under threat. He accused the opposition for what he calls toxic rhetoric, which he says has left the impression that there is a breakdown of the rule of law. This comes as the country's justice minister has summoned a member of the House of Representatives, Yeka Koluba, to the Justice Ministry today, Monday, to discuss the tension in the country involving the representative and President George Weah. Information Minister Nnamdi says the justice minister simply wants Representative Koluba to clarify what he meant when he said that President George Weah may not be in power within 3 months.
The reason for this citation is very simple. He has been called in to clarify some statements that he made last week. In fact, he was very specific in his statements. He said that the president will not be in power within 3 months, and that has caused a lot of excitement. So the Minister of Justice has called him in for him to clarify these statements.
Minister, the way we understand it is that there are a number of people, including some army generals or former rebels, who are making threats on people who are critical of the government. The question, why are these people not being summoned?
No citizen of Liberia has made any complaint to the Ministry of Justice or to any of the authorities about a particular threat by any particular former general. Now, last week, the Solicitor General of Montserrat County cited some of the generals who had made a statement on radio. And he also sent a citation to Mr. Yeke. So those people appeared at the Temple of Justice. They were questioned and they were warned. And then they left and offered apologies. There is a desire on the part of some people to create the impression that there is a breakdown of rule of law in Liberia, and that is not the case. What has happened is that the opposition has ramped up their toxic rhetoric. They have called for a mass demonstration on June 7th, We are fair to them that you have your democratic right to hold a demonstration, but just do it peacefully. So our democracy is not under threat. So we will continue to do our job as a government to ensure that people have freedom of expression, freedom of assembly.
You mentioned the June 7th demonstration or rally. Is your government concerned about this rally and the possibility of what might come out of it? Because people say the reason this rally is being planned is because President Weah is not running the country effectively.
The government has a responsibility to ensure that the rights of all of those who want to protest or demonstrate or exercise, those rights are protected. And we have also called on the organizers of the demonstration to ensure that the demonstration is peaceful and that it is orderly and that there's no operation outside the parameters of the law.
Last week, there was this story about snakes in the foreign ministry where President Weah's offices are, suggesting that the snakes forced the president out of office. When is the office expected to open?
Liberia is a tropical country. There are so many snakes around the foreign ministry building. So yes, there were two snakes in the building. And as a result of that, there was a decision made to re-fumigate the entire building. And naturally, Mr. President will not be in the building working, nor will any of the staff in the building be there working while the fumigation is going ahead. That was done, and Mr. President will return to office on Monday.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Information Minister. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Burkina Faso is facing massive internal displacement because of violence. The United Nations reports more than 100,000 people have been displaced this year in the West African nation. And as viewers Carl Abab reports from Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, the displacements are taking a deep toll on children and teachers forced out of the classroom.
These Burkinabe students are hard at work with their latest social studies lesson. But with each passing week in Burkina Faso, fewer classrooms like this one remain open. The reason?
Same question de vie.
It is a matter of life and death.
The threat from jihadist violence is now so severe in Burkina Faso that 150,000 children can't go to school and about 5,000 teachers can't teach in their classrooms. The laughter in this elementary school playground rings bittersweet in the ears of displaced teacher Sia Michael. He remembers the joy of his students, he says, before Islamic militants burned down his school and forced him to flee.
They often left messages saying that if they return and you're still there, your life will be in danger. In this case, what are you going to do? You have to leave. Once they burn down the school, then your life is next.
The closings have spread across the country's east and north, where jihadists from neighboring Niger and Mali have spilled over the borders. Opposed to Western education, the militants destroy some schools like Michael's. Others are closed by teachers, worried they'll be targeted next. Badina Joseph fled his village near the nation's northern border with Mali after Salafists showed up with specific demands.
They warned teachers that if we did not move or start teaching in Arabic, the following day we better leave the village. They required us to teach in a language unknown to us, so we closed the schools and left before December holidays.
Education advocates say the closings will lead to long-term repercussions for Burkina Faso's future.
Any Burkinabe must be concerned, because to destroy a country, you just need to destroy education.
Officials are working to reopen some schools, but many fear children won't attend as long as violence remains on the rise. Carla Babb, VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
A malaria vaccine pilot program will be launched this Tuesday in Malawi after nearly $1 billion U.S. dollars of investment and decades of research. GlaxoSmithKline PLC is the pharmacy giant behind the drug that treats malaria, which kills nearly 500,000 people each year. The World Health Organization's program area manager for immunization and vaccine development, Dr. Richard Mihigo spoke to Ricky Stryak about the upcoming pilot and his hopes for the future of malaria prevention.
Because as you know, in-country malaria infection is still one of the leading cause of morbidity and mortality, particularly in young children. And we do have, of course, other tools to control the disease, using impregnated, detritus bed nets, a certain number of new novel medicines. But I think the last, particularly 1 or 2 years, we have seen a sort of an upsurge in the number of cases of malaria in the region. And so I think having a vaccine, adding on the large arsenal of tools that we have for the moment, it's kind of an historical moment for this continent. So we really hope that this is a new era that is going to start, despite the limited efficacy of the vaccine. But I think it's probably going to add a significant contribution to the fight against malaria.
I know that $700 million has been spent on the project by the British drug maker Glaxo, but they're saying that they would need more money to, quote, hand over the baton to other partners, I'm guessing such as WHO. What is the goal and how much money is needed to get there?
It's very difficult for the moment to estimate what could be the overall envelope to control or to eradicate malaria globally and particularly in the African region. But I think that speaking for this vaccine in particular, this is a vaccine that for the moment is only being produced for those three countries in a pilot mode, because we have some lesson to learn from these pilot implementation. As you know, this will be a product that is going to be administered in 4 doses schedule, which was not the case for most of the vaccine. So I think a country has to learn how to better reach the target population with this vaccine.
As you mentioned, there has been an upsurge in malaria in recent years. What do you think is behind that?
I think very difficult to generalize the situation, but I think the data that we have shows an upsurge of cases the last 2 to 3 years. And I think there could be many reasons behind that. Complacency in the implementation of the proven strategy that do exist for the moment. This is why we want to take this opportunity for not only the World Malaria Day, but also this new tool, the new vaccine, to make sure that we continue to mobilize the population and the countries.
That was Dr. Richard Mihigo, the World Health Organization's Program Area Manager for Immunization and Vaccine Development. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Brazzaville. Ugandan police have been explaining why they asked Member of Parliament Robert Chakulayi, popularly known as Bobi Wine, to cancel his upcoming concerts. Bobi Wine has been a critic of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, but Fred Enega, Commissioner of Police for Public Relations, says the concert organizers failed to meet public safety and security standards.
Following the fact that we've been having policing challenges in a number of music shows, concerts and promotions, we came up with new guidelines on safety and security regarding music concerts. And we called the major promoters behind a number of music concerts and we gave them the guidelines. Among the many promoters that we met, the promoters of the Charanga concert who promote Bobi Wine's music. And because we've been having poor track records with the Charanga concert, where you'd find we have, at the end of the day, would get involved in multiple incidents of public nuisance due to overcrowding. You'd find incidents of hooliganism characterizing. And then the community around Busawara, which is one of the beaches that he has, was also complaining about violation of traffic rules and various misconducts.
Isn't it the number one responsibility of the police department is to ensure public safety, and that instead of canceling a concert, that the police job is to make sure that whatever the nature of the concert, that it takes place, but that the police are there to make sure that everyone is safe?
Yeah, that is our main mandate. But you know, where it comes to some of these private events, there is a role where you find proprietors, other stakeholders in the private sector coming up with private policing to support the public policing roles that we do carry out. And I also believe where you are in the America, it is not totally left to the police. The police comes in to augment and support the private policing initiatives.
Fred Enega is the Commissioner of Police for Public Relations. You are speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the 2019 semi-finalist at the ongoing CAF Under-17 Championship, where Guinea emerged the Group B runners-up in the CAF Under-17 Championship in Tanzania to book a place to face Nigeria in the semi-finals on Wednesday. Guinea thus picked Africa's fourth ticket for the World Cup holding in Brazil later this year. In the other Group B matches, Cameroon, already qualified, played a goalless draw with Senegal. Cameroon will face Angola in the other semi-final match that will come immediately after the Nigerian-Guinean clash. In boxing news, Larry Ekundayo, Nigeria's number one boxer, has vowed to fight like a warrior in his next fight to make Nigerians proud. Larry Ekundayo will be defending his European IBF welterweight belt, as well as fighting for the vacant intercontinental belt in the coming months. He says Anthony Joshua, the Nigerian-born British heavyweight boxer, has been an inspiration.
I've got the biggest support so far, which is the heavyweight champion of the world, Anthony Joshua. He knows what it's like with the politics of boxing, and he's been very, very supportive. And trying to spin the table, bring the titles back to Nigeria and defend it. Let's see how it works.
In tennis news, president of the Ghana Tennis Federation, Isaac Abuagia-Dua, has announced that about 30 participants from Africa and Europe will participate in the fifth edition of the Magdan International Tennis Federation World Tour in Accra. The competition, billed for Monday, April 29th to 4th of May at the tennis court of the Accra Sports Stadium, is open to all players and has a cash prize of $5,000 for the winner.
There are seeded players all over the world who are coming to grace the occasion, and we assure you of the best of tournaments that Ghana has ever hosted.
And now to athletics. Kenya's former Olympic 1,500 meters champion, Asbel Kiprop, has been handed a 4-year ban for doping, the Athletics Integrity Unit said at the weekend. The 29-year-old, who won 3 world championship golds, tested positive for the banned blood booster erythropoietin in November 2017. Asbel Kiprop has argued his urine sample, which was taken out of competition, could have been tampered with by his testers, who had tipped him off about their visit and taking a payment from him.
Remember my sample report, it says no result, you know, from the laboratory, from the WADA Adams report. So it gives me a no result value. And I'm being accused of an adverse analytical finding, which is, you know, which brings a lot of, you know, questions.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, April 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.